Welcome back to Misunderstood. It's a new year. It's 2024. So happy to be back. So happy to be continuing this conversation with brilliant leaders. And today I'm here with someone who I think in his own right is already a renowned activist in the youth. Has been spoken about in media, matriculated from JP Boys in 2023. I met him through debating, but it was a video that I saw on TikTok about him speaking about climate change, speaking about climate activism, that I was intrigued. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to speak to you. Utsile, how are you doing today?
I'm all right. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me. It's you have a brilliant studio set up here.
Thank you very
much. I'm happy to start off your podcast for 2024, and I'm glad you'll be answering all of my questions today.
All of your questions. That's the first time anyone's come set with questions. I want to start a bit with just activism in general. Why climate activism? What brought you to that moment? And essentially, what was your upbringing that then climate activism became such a big thing?
Okay. So it basically starts with my family. My family had been involved in the liberation struggle. My grandfather is a leader in the ANC, the SACP, well, what was then the banned Communist Party, and the trade union movement underground. And so that history made it, from a very young age, possible for me to be exposed to a lot of pockets of leadership in the country. And as a result of that, you know, you become a very well-informed young person.
Yeah.
I think that that can be said of the people we share circles with, particularly in debating. And as part of that, you know, you learn to stand up for things that are in the public interest. You learn to stand up for things that often most people look away from, but are incredibly important when we're talking about moving society forward. And so it was, oddly enough, through debating, my grade 8 year, that I was exposed to climate change. Because, you know, debaters, we do model the United Nations. If you want any evidence that I'm a holder of minority opinions, I did model UN in grade 8. And whilst we were there, it was hosted by SIA, it was at WITS, Professor Colleen Vogel from the University of Johannesburg came to give a presentation on the climate crisis. And damn it, man. You know, it's one of those moments where your entire world, your whole world shifts in its axis. It turns upside down. So she explained the level of threat that climate change poses to us here in Southern Africa, particularly us as young people, because we're going to be the ones who have to live through this. And I was completely taken by it because you think you know the world. You know, when you're a debater, you think you know better than most people. But then suddenly you have this new concept brought to you in the most unlikely and unexpected way. So I got into a deep dive. I got home, started doing research, and I realized really how extensive the crisis is, the failure of government to respond, the failure of many private sector companies to respond, the influence that many in the petrochemical sector, the interests that they have in not having us respond to it. And it's sort of one of those moments where you say, well, if no one's going to do anything, I'm going to do something about it. And so that's how I got involved. I just said, I'm going to do something about it. Do you want to know the organizations worked with?
I think I'm just taken aback at that story because I think when I was 14, I couldn't care much for the world. I wasn't in debating. And I think the fact that you were almost able to recognize something and then follow through with it is so amazing. Because I mean, now we're speaking about 5 years later.
Yeah.
And you've been engaged with various organizations from what I've seen. And part of that commitment is a grade 8 who said, I want to change the world. Yeah. And you're sitting here having major impact, having been heard, having been invited to various conferences. How do you then implement that in your society at the moment and in your closed community? Because boys' schools haven't necessarily been the most progressive, haven't necessarily engaged with things such as climate change and haven't taken them seriously. So what was your impact with that? And did you ever get like backlash?
Well, I wouldn't want to overstate my impact. You know, in the climate space we talk about the collectiveness of the action that we take, you know. I just happened to be one of the loudest voices.
Mm.
There are far more experienced, better-minded people who have had a much greater impact. We don't know their names, and that's the great tragedy of this, of the climate space and the way it's operated. But in the work that I've done, you know, we started the Sundial movement, myself and a dear friend of mine, Petra De Beer. And we said we wanted to bring schools into this because I realized from my school, you know, we talk about sustainability only in life orientation.
Yeah.
And those who take geography talk about it there at a more extensive level. The rest of us don't really interact with it. And if you're not going to interact with it at school, what is the likelihood of you interacting with it at home?
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing we discovered is that it's very difficult for people to interact with new concepts from their own home life. Most of what people interact with as new concepts, you find out in the world. You find it in your workplace, you find it at school, find it in all of your social spaces. So with that in mind, I said to myself, JEPI and schools in South Africa could be the vehicle by which we get millions of South Africans talking about the climate crisis. And so the thought process behind that was that wouldn't it be incredible if young people were the ones driving the discussion around climate change, if young people weren't the ones teaching their parents about climate change? I mean, I loved that idea. And so the first action we took at my school was that, you know, I said, let's try get a recycling project off the ground. Let's try eliminate single-use plastics. Now, if you've been to a boys' school, more specifically to a boys' school's tuck shop,
yeah,
almost everything is wrapped in single-use plastic. And
correct,
to get the caterer to shift on that is an incredible... I think it would be easier to solve world hunger. And given the fact that the boys just want their food,
yeah,
they don't care what it's wrapped in, it becomes that more difficult to get student buy-in. So that was the first thing I said I was going to do my grade 8 year. We're going to eliminate single-use plastics. I got in the room. I didn't know what I was doing. I got a meeting with the deputy. We sat down. I didn't know what I was doing. I said, okay, let's try eliminate single-use plastics. I said, okay, we'll set up a meeting with the vendor. But this was close to the end of the year. So a lot got thrown up in the air. Mm. So the next thing I know, it's 2020. January 2020, I say, let's do this again. We get going, we get some progress. February, we get some progress, we're about to get there. And then March.
COVID.
So it's upended there. So I'm like, okay, we'll resume this when we get back. Obviously, the nature of the pandemic is that it's not a really good time to be switching up your packaging.
Yeah.
Specifically plastic. They saw that as the way to separate all of the food products that they sell. So I was like, okay, I'll concede on this for now. I'll circle around back. But then I said, okay, if I can't have a micro level, let's see if I can try implement something on a macro level, which defies any logic. If you can't do something small scale, why would you do it large scale? But I'm one of those people, I said, okay, if the small stakes can't be won, let's go for the big stakes. Mm. Maybe I can take out Goliath and then come around for David.
Oof.
And so what happened was that I said, okay, I joined Youth at SAYA. They have a youth policy committee on climate change. And I said, if I can't get my school to change, let's see if I can get government policy to change. Because Youth at SAYA does a lot of policy work. They discuss a lot with the Ministry of Environment, the Ministry of Mineral Resources and Energy, and the newly created Ministry of Electricity. And with that work, we set forth doing a document that would pretty much define what young people in this country want out of policy relating to climate, how we'd want government to respond, how we'd want corporates to respond. And that is the South African Youth Climate Action Plan, which we worked on during COVID. I was part of the drafting committee with that. I was very happy to be part of the drafting process of that document. It's an incredible document. And that document pretty much set forth the agenda for us now. So we have this document. It's a clear vision document. It's a plan. You know, we often hear President Thabo Mbeki talk about the NDP saying it's not a plan. It's really a vision document. Well, this is an actual plan. This is a document that says this is what we want out of this. And that's the document we've then used as a guiding post in the policy negotiations that we have with the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. I forgot public enterprises, because after all, they more or less control Eskom unless you read Never mind. Let me not get political. But so we do a lot of negotiations work with them. And that's where I took the work that I was doing. When I said, okay, I couldn't do anything in my school. Let me see if I can get something done on a policy level. And we negotiate a lot with the Presidential Climate Commission now. In fact, that clip that you referenced was a colloquium we had there. Mm. And I underscored to them that, you know, we must talk about renewables in the most realistic form. We must try eliminate the role of coal in the way we generate energy in this country, because ultimately we see this from new trade restrictions that are coming out of the EU, which are one of our biggest trading partners, and the US. They want to trade with countries that are now sustainable. And we in South Africa have the blessed gift of having sunshine. Yes. Even though if you look out the window where we are now,
it's raining.
It's raining, but we have sunshine. But the rain brings wind as well. So we also have rain. And we can generate a lot of renewable energy via solar, wind. And obviously now they've gone along with nuclear, but which we can get into later.
Definitely.
But coming back to what I'm trying to get at here, the work we've done has had some impact.
Mm.
Because we are seeing the Ministry of Mineral Resources and Energy no longer going as coal heavy as they were. You know, if you go back to 2018, you'll see Gwede Mantashe talking about clean coal. I've never heard of such a thing. But the minister says it's there, so okay. But as a young person, I deny that it exists as a real thing. So the Ministry of Resources and Energy no longer talks about clean coal. But they now talk about nuclear. Okay, it's a pivot, fine. It's renewable, fine. It's expensive, very expensive. Practical, we'll see. But it's a good development, and we brought about that. Now that we have the Ministry of Electricity, really, the Minister of Electricity is talking a lot about renewables in the most realistic sense. Mm. He identifies the value of that. And it's because of the dialogues we have with him and a lot of stakeholders who we've managed to convince to have this conversation with him. So we've had an impact on a macro level, on government policy. I'm hoping with the election, things can turn out better.
Mm.
I'm hoping after the elections, we can actually have serious conversations about this, because I feel that now, with the elections coming up, they're trying to buy out their time to continue winning the coal belt regions and to continue having union support. But we think that everything will turn out well. I think so. I think I've skewed away from the question that you had.
Which is fine.
But I think that more or less sums it up. But can I just come back to one last point?
Most definitely.
So we started with school action on a micro level. So this was 2020, 2021. 2022, Petra and I said, okay, Sundial is what we need to do. And in 2022, we managed to mobilize over, I think it's 14 schools. Oof. To strike during September 2022. Oof. For the climate. This was sending a message to COP27, our negotiators there, to say, listen, we may have been quiet for a while, but now we're awake. What's happening? We're paying attention, very attentively. And we expect the very best out of this conference. Mm. And we're watching, and we're voting in 24. So if you don't move with the necessary urgency that we need you to move with, because it's our future, then we're going to have serious problems. And so, yeah, I went, in some sense, I went in reverse. I went macro to go micro.
Oof.
But I suppose you need to prove things on a macro level so that on a small scale, it's easier to maneuver. But I'm happy that at least something got done.
Oof. I feel like that's just a powerful story in and of itself, because I think not only does it show a kid going from school to government policy to drafting to being in rooms with such powerful people, but the second thing, which I think is the most important thing and the interesting thing for me, is that you're simply someone who wants to mobilize, who wants action. And there's a lot of people in the youth who, I don't want to say are apathetic, but very much like to complain about their situation and don't do anything about it.
Can I be... So that's a similar syndrome I've identified. But it's something that I've come to realize. It's inherent given the state of many things in the country.
Mm.
I, because of my background, am able to look at things and say, no, things can be better. You know, to take from Kennedy, some people see things as they are and ask why. I choose to believe things that never were and ask why not. Oof. That in some senses, is a privilege of my background. Now, many people who don't have that might not be able to relate. Many people who are young are seeing things as they are seeing young people disenfranchised, and are saying to themselves, given the fact that our generation in particular, Gen Z, we've never known a South Africa that's functioned,
yeah.
You know? I mean, obviously we were born during the time of Thabo Mbeki, triple B plus rating, back when Eskom and SARS were winning international awards, people were coming to study these models. But for us, that was completely over our heads. You know, it's somewhere up there with Takalani Sesame, you know?
Mm.
So we started to actualize when South Africa was, the political space in this country, and South Africa was falling apart. You know, my first memory politically is Fees Must Fall.
Yeah.
And Fees Must Fall followed Roads Must Fall. So you can see even then, any little thing I was seeing was a nation where clearly something's wrong. Then there's the Nugent Commission, arms deal, state capture, Zuma Must Fall, Zupta. You know, it's we've never known a South Africa that's functioned. And so when we see things disintegrating currently, that apathy comes from the sense that, have you ever known a South Africa that's worked?
Oof.
You haven't. So then those of us who actually have a lived experience where you have interacted with people that have made the South Africa that worked, that have brought democracy into the country, you tend to believe, at least the way I do, that you need active leadership to make a nation that works. And that active leadership starts with working in whatever small space you're in. You start small scale, you work your way up, you keep building to keep inspiring and giving people hope that something can be done. And I interrupted you on this point because I think it's something we don't talk a lot about. You know, the fact that this apathy stems from an underlying problem that we've never known a functional country. But that should make us all the more determined to make a functional country. That's at least what drives me at the moment. I want to make a functional country. We have incredible leaders. I've met the most incredible leaders.
That's true.
We have no deficit of leadership. We just have a deficit of leadership in the right positions to do something about what's wrong with this country. The most incredible leaders I've met, they're not in government. They're in the civic space. Damn it, man, some of these people should be governing the country. But that's something to work on next. And you can ask me about that when it comes to So We Vote.
And I definitely want to speak to that. But before that, I want to ask you an interesting question about yourself. Would you consider yourself an outlier in terms of the journey that you've walked? Because I think you're speaking about your legacy and what that's done for your own motivation, for your own view of how you should look at leadership and how you should change the country. But also being able to articulate yourself, you've kind of been given all these gifts. And my question is, how do you then view yourself and place yourself in the general public when you're engaging with people on a day-to-day?
Well, I wouldn't want to give the impression that I'm in some way, separate from the majority of the people of this country, the majority of the young people in this country. We finished matric.
Yeah.
You ask SARS, I qualify as unemployed. So I'm more or less with the public in that sense. But everyone has a unique story. And that unique story informs the way they approach the world and the way they approach their role in the world. My story involves being an active citizen because that is literally what's inculcated into my blood. There's no family event where current affairs aren't discussed. My grandparents sat and read the newspaper. I was raised around them. So it's something that I picked up. And I kept doing, you know, everyone wants to emulate a father figure in their lives. For me, it's my grandfather coming home and reading the newspaper. So when he's done, I'll sit, try to emulate a big belly and sit in his chair and read a newspaper, not knowing what the heck I'm reading. So that unique story capacitates me to be where I am. Everyone's unique story capacitates them to be where they are. But how I would relate is that we're all in this together. It has to be something that we recognize as a commonality. This idea that we must act for the purposes of moving the nation forward. I don't think that it's something that is, you know, given to a divine few.
Mm.
It's active citizenry. It's democracy building. Everyone's a democracy builder in their own way. This is how I express my democracy building. But there's an element of your question I've forgotten. But I think what I wanted to end off with by answering that question was to say that this, what I've done, is in no way unique. Anyone could have done it. Anyone can do it. It just depends on having the network around you that can support you to do it.
Mm.
I had the network to do it. I probably would have, without the network, it would have taken me probably 3 years longer.
Mm.
The circumstances were easier. Everything was virtual because of COVID. Today, if someone wanted to do what I wanted to do, it would be a little bit harder if they don't have the network that I had. But more or less, it comes back to that first thing I said, you know, it's not a unique thing. Anyone could have done it.
Mm.
Anyone could have done it. They might have taken longer, but I think in some instances, I think they could have done it even better than me. I mean, remember, I don't want to talk about this as a far distant memory. I was in high school just 2 weeks ago. We were matrix 2 weeks ago, you and I. And so as part of that, you don't really know what you're doing most of the time. You're just freestyling.
Mm.
That's literally the way Sundial was built. That's literally the way we established Fridays for Future Gauteng, which then sparked Fridays for Future Western Cape and KwaZulu. So We Vote is being built. We were really freestyling it. But for some reason, whilst we're freestyling it, we just keep getting in the right rhythm.
Mm.
That's why I say in some instances, you'll find that someone could have done it better than me. My answers are all over the place.
No, it's all good.
I hope you're going to edit this to make me sound good.
No, I'm telling you right now, you sound amazing. I'm following you.
Yeah.
And I want to give a bit more light to Sundial. And yeah. I guess that's ironic. Give a bit more light to Sundial. Just explain exactly what that was, what inspired that, and what it meant for the schools that were involved.
Okay. You see, when it comes to Sundial, I'm always excited to talk about it. Especially because I get to talk about Petra. Because Petra was literally, without Petra, Sundial wouldn't have existed. It was Petra's idea. Okay, so the story of Sundial goes this way. I was walking from history, which was like, I remember the day so well. It was a Thursday, it was history, third period, grade 11. Which is on like, if you know my school, JP, history's like on the bottom side of the school because Mr. Spillars' classroom's at the bottom side of the school, just like by the bottom field. So from history to English, which is like on the top side of the school. I was leaving history, I had my phone out, I was texting Petra. And then Petra says, I want to create a network for schools to take action on climate. Simple like that. Because I was with Fridays for Future at the time and Petra thought that I maybe knew something about doing that. Little did she know, Fridays for Future... It's just the name that's getting it somewhere. Yeah. What I'm doing is just helping people sit together, formulate a plan and action it. So we start talking about it like casually like that. This is around October. It's really like a half-baked conversation. It's just like 1 3-minute voice note as I'm walking from history to English. And it pretty much dies off that conversation for like another month or so. And then when Petra's about to start prelims, she decides, no, I want to launch this thing. Now, I'm saying to myself, you crazy. You're about to go into prelims. You're applying to a university overseas. This is not the right time to be starting a movement. But if you've ever met Petra, telling her no is like trying to convince the moon that it's as warm as the sun. It's unlikely, it's impossible. Petra looks at things and says, why can't it be? And she makes it happen. So then I was like, okay, this is how you'd want to start. You'd want to recruit schools. You'd want to recruit focal points in schools to help organize. You'd want to create a small training session for these focal points so that they can know about climate change. But I said to you, you want to underscore the fact that it has to be really made for high schoolers. It can't be made for older young people. It can't be made for younger young people. It has to be made for people like us who still have to go to school from 8 o'clock to about 2 o'clock, who have homework, who have sports, but also are interested in having a role in resolving the climate crisis. And it also has to be in a way that you and I, when we were starting off, could understand what we're doing.
Yeah.
So it has to be digestible in that way. So then Petra agreed. So then we recruited the schools. We put together a curriculum, like a mini curriculum around the climate crisis, explaining what it was. It was really like a PowerPoint presentation. It was supposed to be 20 minutes. Yo, I think the first one lasted an hour.
Jeez.
That's because people had questions. And yo, explaining climate change in an hour is...
It's hard.
It is hard because you want to give people a good understanding, but you also want to not make it exclusivist. You want people to understand what it is you're talking about. So we did that. We focused on that. And by September, we were able to mobilize schools to have action, to have actions on climate. And you can see the way this thing followed. It's literally just luck. It was the lining up of the right elements that we were able to do that. And in time for COP. So by the time that was done, Petra and I just sat back and we're like, okay, you go finish prelims. I need to go make sure I have good marks to apply for university.
Definitely.
We'll regroup in 2023. And more or less, Sundal is holding steady. We have what we call the Talk in 20 now, which is a better version of the presentation that Focal Points can give to their schools. We had the trainings on them. We haven't yet launched it fully because we want to recruit a new cohort of focal points. We want to bring in more schools. And we also want to get our platform up and running. So we have a website, which is a platform. So you'll have this is a little bit of marketing here, light marketing.
All good.
But you have this website where there's a platform. You'd log in, you get login details. And this is essentially the platform by which you connect with other schools and other focal points. And it's not just for students. Educators who want to get their schools involved can be part of this. And this platform is, you know, I think it's the best thing since sliced bread. It is an incredible platform. Nothing like it exists in the climate space for young people. And apart from the Climate Justice Charters platform, they're the one exception. We're competing with them. We're hoping to beat them, but we're in the same space, so... It'll be good if we work very well.
Yeah.
In a very symbiotic relationship. But yeah, that's Sundal. And 2024, incredible things are coming. Follow us on Instagram. Follow everything we're going to be doing because this is going to be the year of a lot of action.
Mm.
Positive action. And I'm determined to have that happen with Sundal. So that's the story. That's what we're doing. That's where we're going. And Petra... It's just about, like, Petra's the most incredible human being I've ever met. I've never met anybody with the capacity to be writing, like, the most difficult physics paper and still be able to launch, I think it was 4 schools in the Western Cape, do the training, meet the people, still recruit more people,
Jeez.
Mobilize it. Petra is superhuman. I don't know what I would have done without her. You can tell I'm speechless. I'm hardly speechless, but I'm speechless when it comes to Petra because she's just that incredible. And why she partnered with me, I don't know. She could have done it on her own, but she thought to bring me along.
I just think there's stories of wisdom. These are stories of hope because you don't hear much of the youth taking action. You don't hear much of people in our age group taking action, but you also don't hear people so committed to a cause. And I think that's the beautiful thing about you and the people you work with, because geez, man, I'm taken away. I'm blown aback. And I want to speak about the second thing, elections, 2024, also a year of change. And So We Vote, which I think started at just the back end of 2023, if I'm not mistaken, if my eyes are correct.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Who's a part of it? What's the plan? Are we ruffling feathers? I'm so keen to hear all about it.
Okay, let me put on my political hat now. So We Vote is a youth voting advocacy group for people who don't know what it is. Check us out on Instagram. The idea for it started with someone who was actually brought into Sundell to be a focal point for his school, Tafir Mustafa. He's the founder. Tafir reached out to me and said, I have this idea for an organization that will hopefully register over 1 million young people, our generation, to vote in 2024. And we're hoping not only to get them registered to vote, but also to help them find people to vote for. We're hoping to get them more informed about the political process. Obviously, me being me, I have a billion things on my plate. I should tell him it's a great idea. How do you want to do it? And then just completely withdraw myself off the process. But no, when he says to me, I have this idea, I want to do it, and I want you to be executive director.
Jeez.
I said yes. I didn't think about it. I didn't take time. I said, I want to do it. Let's do this. This is early 2023 when we say we're going to. No, this is late 2022, in fact. Mm. So the idea came late 2022. And we sat together virtually, not physically. He's in the Western Cape. I'm here in Gauteng. We sat virtually to craft out what So We Vote would look like. So we wanted this to be entirely youth-led. We want young people at the core of the executive leadership of the organization. We want to have a network of partner organizations that are going to work alongside us on this registration drive that we're doing. We want to have what is a civics network. That's civic society, as in people, not the organizations. People who want to volunteer to go door to door registering people in their community. People who would volunteer to drive people to the poll station, the election station on the day of the elections. People who would, you know, carry umbrellas if it's raining on the day. We want to have a network of people and volunteers ready to ensure that we get as many votes out as possible. Give people no excuse
to not vote.
To not vote. 2024, where were you at? You know? And that was the idea we had. And we sat on it and we thought of how do we implement this? And then December 2022, you'll remember Palapala Gate happens. There's rumors that the president's flying back from Cape Town to resign. There's a lot of uncertainty. And I'm saying to myself, damn it, man. This 2024 season, it's not going to be like any other election. The possibility for there to be a lot of political uncertainty is going to be incredibly high. This will determine South Africa for the next 30 years. Oof. We can't afford not to have a seat at the table. We can't afford not to have a position in determining what the country will look like. Because even if the same party wins in 2024, 2024 is how we prepare for 2029. Ask me personally, is it possible to remove the governing party? Yes. Under the right circumstances, yes.
Yeah.
The likelihood of it depends on people's individual political stances. But 2024, I view it as the dry run for 2029, where we really have to have full control of what happens. I think in 2029, we will really need young people in particular to have both hands on the ball, both hands on the process, just physically, our hands are in there. So in 2024, we really need to mobilize as many people as possible to show that, okay, young people can do this. The benefit of 2024 is that there's a lot of new actors as well appearing.
That's very true.
We have the progressives, your Rise Mzansi, Build One South Africa, these new progressive organizations which are really trying to appeal to young people differently from the traditional old guards, DA, ANC. EFF's 10 now, but in politics, that's... You're young, but you're also getting a little bit established. So you're part of the established class now, the established political class. So for us, it's registering young people. It's helping them find their political home or organizations they can affiliate with. And So We Vote in 2024 will be doing that. Mm. We're already getting everything off the ground. Right now we're starting digital as we're getting the infrastructure to do things physically on the ground, up and going. We have till the president tells us it's the election. Because in case you didn't know that, the president tells us the election day. How funny is that? Guy can keep it going for as long as he wants. But we're getting the physical infrastructure going. Virtually, we have our social media. We're getting our website up and running. Your guys, building websites is exhausting.
No, definitely.
Because it has to be interactive. It has to work. It has to work on all types of devices. And I have tremendous potential for 2024. And can I tell you why? It's the philosophy behind it. The philosophy behind getting people to vote in 2024 is all about collective action. It's all about understanding that everything we're doing now will have an impact on the world and on the society we will live as young people, we will live in.
Yeah.
It is that understanding that if we fail to act, we not only have everything to lose, but if we do act in the right way, if we do bring a sense of accountability to the politics of this country, if we do show politicians that we're not going to shy away from politics, we're going to run towards it, we have everything to gain. So we have everything to lose and everything to gain. I love that phrase. I use it all the time. But another understanding is the fact that this is one of the tools that people in the political class who want to control the outcomes of elections, this is a tool they use to really keep people away from voting. And that tool is cynicism. Mm. That tool is believing that nothing can be done about the political process. Because if you strip away the corruption, you strip away the maladministration, you strip away the just overall destruction of the South African state, all of that is built to make people feel hopeless. And when you feel hopeless, you don't vote. You don't participate. It becomes easier for political actors to bring their own people to come and vote. Less people vote, the more these small groups that they bring about to come and vote, control the narrative, control the outcomes of the election, the more they get to hold on to power. So that's why I say it is the last tool in their arsenal. When everything else has been mobilized, cynicism, doubt, a lack of belief that anything can be done is the last weapon they have. So we really have now the duty to mobilize against that. We have to act on it. And it's going to be very difficult in 2024. It's not like 2019.
Yeah.
Social media is going to have an incredible role in this. We're using social media now to obviously get people more aware about the election, about the political actors in it. But 2024 is going to be very difficult because you're going to have an increased role of social media in the sense that misinformation, fake bots, conspiracy theories, crackpot conspiracy theories. I always go crackpot, unhinged conspiracy theories because those are the things that dominate social media in this age. They really dominate the narrative in elections. And so it's going to be very difficult. Do I think we can do something? I do think we can do something very positive. I don't want to predict the winners and the losers, but what I do want to say is that one of the great victories that will come out of 2024 is that you'll see an increased role of young people in the election. If we do our job right, you'll see increased accountability, I hope, if we do our job right. That's something I'm very optimistic about. I'm very optimistic about the future. Some people say, why? You keep telling us the world's ending. I say, no, things can get better. Why? Because you have people that aren't willing to give up on the processes that will get us into a better state of being. And so, let me turn off my iPad because I keep looking at my iPad.
It's all good.
That's what I think will happen in 2024 with So We Vote. Mm. And remember, everything's falling apart. The nation's seemingly coming to an end. What do? So We Vote. That's what we do. We vote. Mm. And that's my my dream pitch for So We Vote. I think it's going to be an incredible organization. We're going to do incredible things and we're going to work very hard on it. Nothing I've ever done, I've gone in to fail.
Yeah.
I've worked very hard on that. All right. That's the end of that.
I have a few more questions before we close. The first one is, to you, what's the value of a vote?
The value of a vote, particularly in South Africa, it's more than gold. It's the ability to have a role in defining your own future, in defining the future of this country, in defining the future of, in that way, generations that will come after you.
Oof.
We live in a time where things that get destabilized now remain destabilized for a while.
Mm.
You know, just look at the state of politics. We let politics get to a very bad, to a very degrading state in the 2010s.
Yeah.
And now in the 2020s, we are reckoning with a politics that is dysfunctional and not fit for purpose. But that's the norm because it was allowed to get there in the 2010s. The pushback wasn't as vicious as it needed to be against such politics. So the value of your vote is playing a role in determining that. It's punishing the type of wrong politics. It's rewarding the type of good politics. It's determining the trajectory of South Africa. And you cannot undervalue the value of your vote in that. You know, many people look at me and they say, but I'm just one person. You're one person, yes, but it's just raining now. A superstorm is just a collection of single raindrops. Oof. You are one raindrop in what is a superstorm that is going to sweep across the country if we get the young people we need voting. You are one raindrop, yes, but you're contributing to this massive storm that ultimately overpowers. We know superstorms overpower.
Yeah.
But it all starts with one raindrop. And in this election, it's one vote that can make all the difference. So don't undervalue your vote. Don't undervalue the buy-in, the contribution you can have to making South Africa better. I'm an optimist at heart. I think it'll be better.
I can hear it and I feel it.
Yeah.
I believe it truly. My second question is politics in your future? And if so, why?
It's a question I get a lot. Listen, I think politics has gotten very bad because we have people who say, send me to Mami. You know, this idea that, you know, they have to put themselves forward. I think politics was at its best when we had leaders that were chosen by the people. I mean, think about the leaders of Oliver Tambo, Walter Sisulu, Joe Slovo, Nelson Mandela. I like to include my grandfather, this John Kadiming, Winnie Mandela. You know, these leaders didn't say, comrades, you must pick me. I want to lead the movement. I want to lead us to freedom. No. It was people on the ground who said, these are the people we want to lead us because they understand what freedom within our lifetime means.
Oof.
And so that's why I say it's not for me to answer. I think that if I were to answer, I'd be contributing to the destruction of politics as it is. Because the people today running around, they are running around saying, send me, I want to go do this. Send me to parliament, send me to the union building, send me to the Gauteng legislature. It's not for me to say, it's for people out there to do it. They want me. I'm not gonna necessarily say I'd agree. I mean, but I think it's not for me to say. Let me end with that. It's not for me to say. It's for other people to say.
And then my last question to you is, what is your message in 2024? What should people look for? What are we taking away?
It's a very good question. And can I be honest? I have a quote. It's not really a quote, but it's more of a prayer by St. Augustine. St. Augustine's Confessions, which sums it up the best. I've been doing it since the start of the year. It's one of my resolutions. But when I need to find it here on my iPad, I can't find it. It's a prayer that goes, grant me, O Lord, to know what I ought to know, to love what I ought to love, to praise what delights you most, to value what is precious in your sight, to hate what is offensive to you. Do not let me judge according to the sight of my eyes, nor pass sentence according to the hearing of the ears of ignorant men. but to discern with a true judgment between things visible, and above all, always, to inquire what is the good pleasure of your will. The part of that prayer that I love is where it says, to not pass sentence according to the ears of ignorant men, or not judge according to my eyes, because in 2024, those are very dangerous things. You hear something from someone, you pass judgment, pass sentence, you pretty much open yourself up to fall for everything. That's my message, personally. The message I give to people is don't lose hope. Remember that everything ever worth doing was incredibly difficult to achieve. Nothing worth doing was ever easy to achieve. But it all starts with us choosing not to run away from the difficult circumstances we live in South Africa, but choosing to charge towards it. I think we can charge towards this incredibly. This is this great process of democracy. I think we can charge towards it. I think we can change the country. 2024, everything is possible. Everything is possible. For the first time in a very long time. But it depends on you. Don't take everything's possible as a signal to say, I can step back and do nothing. Take everything's possible as a signal to you to say, there is a lot I have to do to bring South Africa to the place that I need it to be. Okay. That's the end.
I don't even know what to say at the end of that. I think this has been profound. You told so much wisdom. I think you're a beacon of hope. You're a beacon of action, which is amazing to see. But I also love having conversations with people who act, because that's what this platform's been about. And I think that's the truth. 2024, things can change.
Can I add something?
Please go ahead.
Young people like us, you in particular, who have created this platform to show to other people our age that action is possible, that people are taking action. You are what give people like me hope. Because when someone like me or someone who is better than me is starting off, it's platforms like the ones you've made possible that open them up to the thinking that they can have an impact, that they can do something. So I just want to applaud you.
Thank
what
you.
You've done.
I appreciate that. I appreciate you for coming. I think I definitely want to have a conversation in the mid-year and at the end of the year so we can speak about where 2024 is, where it goes.
A debrief.
Exactly. A debrief where we're either shaking our heads and we're going, oh Lord, we're running, or we're saying, look, it's happened. Mm-hmm. And I want to get involved and we'll have that conversation off air. I want to see and be part of the youth that's taking action. And I just want to thank you, and I hope people take so much wisdom, so much insight. I wish that you become president somewhere in your time. I mean,
No, you're going to get me in trouble saying that.
I know.
You're going to get me in trouble.
But I'm one of those people who's saying we need people like you. And I just want to say thank you very much. And as always, this has been Misunderstood.